Mr. Mott told Picard the Federation shouldn't have colonized so close to the Cardassians. Riker agrees with Mr. Mott 100%, and truth is in the eye of the beholder. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Sirach Lofton.
Hello, hello.
My name is Ryan T. Husk, and today we're doing a review of Star Trek The Next Generation Season 5, Episode 3, Ensign Row. Story by, here's a fun one, Rick Berman and Michael Piller, teleplay by Michael Piller, directed by Sirach's buddy, Les Landau. This was October 5th, 1991. Where were you, and how are you today, Sirach?
I'm great. I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. Doing just
fine,
thanks.
Yeah, I've
been
better. You know, yeah. Obviously, we're going through a lot of stuff in this city, but...
We're hotboxing smoke, and we're all paranoid and panicked, and our friends are losing their homes, but
yeah.
We're reviewing an episode, so there's that.
Well, you know...
It kind of feels weird.
And what I mean is, you know, thankfully, I'm not affected as much as other people. That's why I'm able, through God's grace, to say that I'm doing great right now, because comparative to other people who are suffering, it's a really sad situation, and my heart really goes out to all of those people.
Yeah.
And we all have friends and family and, you know, loved ones that are either directly or indirectly affected by this.
And it really is just the luck of the draw. You know, we look at these things and we go, that could be me, that could be anyone, that could be my house, that could be my entire neighborhood, that could be anybody. And it's just the luck of the draw. So we have to support the people when it happens to them. Boy, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And on that note, everybody, please, I don't know how to segue that. Please like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell icon for notifications. If you're listening in, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. We'd really appreciate that. And go to patreon.com/the7th rule if you'd like to support the show. Or more importantly, go to the Hollywood Food Coalition, where John Billingsley and his pals do great and amazing work feeding the homeless, which right now, that number has surely skyrocketed.
Yeah. And, you know, this episode in itself kind of really deals with a lot of tragedy. It really comes from a dark place. And it's one of the, I can see this almost being the episode that is, you know, the backdrop for Deep Space Nine. This feels
you
like
see
Deep
everybody,
Space Nine.
Sirach knows. I was going to say something, but I was like, let me leave it alone and see what Sirach puts together on this, man. That's exactly what it is. I mean, and what the reason Rick Berman and Michael Piller was interesting to me was because that, you know, that's who created Deep Space Nine. So I wondered when I saw that, did they already have Deep Space Nine as an idea when they wrote that, when they said, let's drop the seed here, let's start it here. Because those are the people that, you know, the following year, Deep Space Nine was happening. So this was already, Deep Space Nine was probably in the works during season 5 here. So I really wonder if that's kind of not just the genesis of the idea, but I wonder if the genesis of the idea had already happened and they created this episode as like planting the first seed.
I have to say it has to be. It's almost inseparable from when you talk about the backstory line of the Cardassians, the Federation occupation, all of these things. They're essentially giving you what is the fundamental baseline story of the backdrop of Deep Space Nine. So I don't think it's possible for them not to have been already in discussions about Deep Space Nine. It was already at least an idea being floated around, in my opinion. And they might possibly wanted to have Rolaren be the major Kira of that show. I don't know what their plans were or not, because it looked as if they were trying to spin her off onto Deep Space Nine, and that it would have been totally believable.
That's exactly it. Deep Space Nine was going to feature Major Ro. That was going to be her. But I don't know what happened, whether she wasn't available or she wasn't interested or whatever happened. And that's why they created the Major Kira character, but it was originally going to be Ro Laren in that Major Kira role, just kind of like how Miles O'Brien went over and Keiko, and eventually Worf went over. But that's what's really interesting about that is that Ensign Ro here was the original Major Kira, and that's where her character was based, and that's who it was going to be. That was the plan. I don't remember why that didn't happen, but also this was the introduction of the Bajorans. This was the first time we see the Bajorans at all in any show, and also, even more importantly, the first time we ever are introduced to Mr. Mott the Barber.
I
So.
don't know about that being as important, but it certainly knew it. It was noticeable. Mott can't stop talking. So, I guess that was some things don't change, right? When you're at the barber shop, you're gonna hear a lot of the gossip. So that doesn't even change 500 years from into the future. But
Well, you'll see in later episodes, he actually gets, he shows up again. His favorite basketball player, obviously, is K-Mott.
was waiting for a dumb mod joke, and I got one,
That's
so I'm
a
happy.
Kenyon Martin joke, everybody at home went by Kmart. Anyway, please continue, Sirach.
That was not funny. But anyways, we got Gen Admiral Kennelly in this episode, right? Who from the beginning something felt off with me. I just didn't trust that guy. I got a little instinct for some things, and I'll tell you the moment that it happened for me is in the beginning scene when he was like, I need you to go and talk to the rebels. And Picard says, well, what are we going to offer them? And he says,
Amnesty.
amnesty.
And
And
Picard laughs. He's like,
Picard,
come on, bro.
he's like, Admiral. It was very great, by the way, performance wise on Picard's part. I really
Yes.
liked his delivery there.
I thought the same thing because I don't think that's on the script. I feel like that was a choice because on the script, it probably just says amnesty. And maybe the writer may have imagined Picard going, Admiral? Like how Riker does, sir? They always do, sir? Or Data says, sir, an inquisitive sir, but he went, Admiral, like, what? Come
Like,
on.
come on.
It's me.
You don't have to sell me on the BS. Give me the real stuff. Like, what am I going to offer these people, right? And so I thought that was really playful on Picard's part, the way he delivered that line. But I also, what gave me the distrust on Admiral Kennelly was the laugh that he gave right after that.
Yeah.
It was like I try to pull a fast one on you. That's what bothered me. Because why would you be trying to pull a fast one on me? We're seriously trying to negotiate. We're trying to de-escalate the situation, and you're giving me some BS, knowing that it doesn't fly. That's why that laugh right there let me know that he's a BS artist who is trying to sell him on, sell him on an idea that he knows is not sellable. That was the problem for me, and that was the tell that I didn't trust him from the beginning.
Right. And that was great. And who knows if that was there again or if it was in response to the way Picard said it, but that was that the thing that Picard said, Admiral, and the Admiral's response, I thought the same thing. I was like, that's such a perfect thing. It tells an entire story in like a
Yes.
few words. And
In a
it
few
was
words.
perfect. It was brilliant.
And speaking of brilliant too, also Michael Piller, his teleplay in this, I mean, the story was great, but the language, the way it was written, was clever to me. This felt like a chess game. This was an almost you didn't know who to trust moment. At first, I was distrustful of Ensign Ro, right? I thought she was walking them into a setup, and she was. But she changed her mind about it. And I mean, it was just very well written because it was a game of gamesmanship. It was a game of maneuvering. It was a chess game between the Cardassians and the Federation and also this admiral. It was a way to expose who was telling the truth. So the construction of this episode, the language and the construction was excellent to me.
And we got our pilot of the week, who was Ensign Rowe. Because remember, every week we have a new pilot now. So
Oh,
that was nice. When I
okay.
saw her there, I was like, oh, good, we've got another pilot of the week, but at least this one has lines. That's cool and that's interesting.
Yeah.
So this episode is it's really big because it gives us these common themes that have happened throughout the dawn of time. And I thought of you when I'm watching this, and I'm thinking Serac's going to recognize these stories of, people that have been displaced. They've been chased out of their home. Then they're scattered all over the world. Then they fight back. There's all these things. Like we've heard this story before, a few times at least. And it really, we recognize it, right? I mean, we understand what the situation is. And sorry, I was just looking at the background here. I'm like, that is so Griffith Park. But anyway, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that was the meat of the episode, and that's where story-wise, I think Rick Berman and Michael Piller hinged the story on a long time story of suffering that we hear by different people, different ethnicities and racial groups throughout the ages. And I think certain lines resonated with me when I heard Picard say, for example, in reference to Admiral Kenley saying that we would offer them amnesty and we would offer them a negotiation and with the Cardassians, but it would be behind closed doors and secret. And when his response was, Picard said, they've endured centuries of generations of sympathy and promises. And that can be applied to a lot of different scenarios when you talk about oppressed peoples throughout history. And so those words resonated with me because Picard, being this kind of voice of reason, was saying that's not good enough. Promises and sympathy, that doesn't help people get out of these situations. They've been offered those kinds of tokens that have not proved or resulted in any kind of substantial change in their lives. Meanwhile, they still remain oppressed. And so I thought that was a very valid statement that was wonderfully written and delivered in this episode.
Yeah, so this episode again is just chock full of these kinds of things where we recognize this. We recognize these lines, we recognize these scenarios, we recognize the situations they find themselves in. And it's really a deep episode, and that's what's great about Star Trek is they can basically plop their characters into a situation that we recognize. Maybe we're not proud of something in our history and we go, oh, this is just like such and such or so and so, or this is just like that thing half a world away, But we definitely recognize it. And, sometimes they tiptoe around it, sometimes they hit it head on. Ira is much more of a hit it head on kind of guy, Ira Stephen Bear on Deep Space Nine. I think this one, Next Generation, is a little bit more, I don't want to say nuanced, but they address situations, but they don't beat them to death. Like in this case, it's just recognize it. We understand it. We feel for Ro. We feel for the characters, the Bajorans, and they kept calling them the Bajora too, by the way. That was weird.
Yeah.
It's like, how much longer are they going to call them the Bajora? Because they certainly don't in Deep Space Nine, do they?
No, they don't. No.
Yeah,
But
they dropped that.
I noticed that too a few times. Worf said the Bajora. But yeah, they went controversial in this episode. They went deep on it. In this particular episode, you see that once again, Picard's diplomacy and tactics, the way his strategy is as a captain, differs than other people. You know, he really uses a lot of diplomacy, a lot of moments in where he tries to convince somebody or reveals somebody's intention through conversation. So a lot of what his effectiveness is through this diplomacy, this conversation that he does. And I thought it was well played out in this episode. But I couldn't help but think of, like, you know, we just recently went through October 7th, and we saw, you know, that kind of attack in Israel. And I think one of the main things that made me think of that was when they went to meet Orta. And he mentioned his face was mutilated, his voice was computerized because his vocal cords were slashed. And so they asked him, I think Orta made a comment like, "Oh, all of this response based on one attack, we should have done it, should have done it sooner," something to that effect. You know, like, we got the Federation's attention, essentially, you know. And so, you know, just when you hear those kinds of words, you're thinking, wow, this is accurate gamesmanship slash diplomacy slash, you know, rebellions, splinter groups. They mentioned, military Bajoran splinter group. And this is exactly how things play out on the world stage. We see this exact thing play out. We see some people become so militarized by whatever their circumstances are and want to lash out and do and create these kind of terrorist acts. We see some people that are not as involved in that way, and they play more of a nurturing to a community type of role. So not everybody has the same reaction when they're under these kinds of occupations, but there are groups in which you'll find, like the Maquis, where people assemble and decide that, you know, they're going to take matters into their own hand. And that's just the reality of the way the world works, you know. And we see that playing out in other countries around the world right now. It's playing out in Syria, for example, you know. And so, this is what happens. I think that Michael Piller and Rick Berman went deep into this particular subject matter. I think with the mindset of, you know, I'm guessing Israel Palestine was the backdrop for the Bajoran Cardassian kind of, relationship. I'm not sure, but I've read different kinds of work that made that kind of comparison and cited certain interviews that Michael Piller and Rick Berman gave that highlighted that fact. So that was one of the things we covered in our text, A Different Trek, when we did the course on Afrofuturism. So, you know, it has been the correlation has been made, not just by me, but by the people who made it.
Course. Yeah, I don't really know where the quote is, but they definitely do talk about it, how they say, look, we draw inspiration from real world things. And they mentioned like the Jews, like the Palestinians. I think they also mentioned the Kurds, things like that, but this
Yes,
kind of stuff
yes.
happens. It's not hard to come up with to come up with an example in our world, unfortunately. But you touched on the Maquis, which is really interesting because this does feel like the initial seeds of the Maquis too, right?
Yeah, especially when you have another Starfleet officer that is been co-opted by this other entity. Basically, their allegiance is not to Starfleet, but to something else, you know, to some other goal or some other organization. And Admiral Kennelly, in this particular instance, was his allegiance was to a particular outcome designated by, you know, his conversations with, you know, other people that were involved outside of the Federation. So I think I think this is good. Yeah, this is the basis of the Maquis. This is the basis of the whole Cardassian occupation storyline, the whole Bajoran, freedom fighter storyline, all of that stuff you can see having strong roots in this episode. And I thought, by the way, the woman that played Ensign Ro did a fantastic job
Michelle Forbes,
of
she's awesome, yeah.
oh, that's Michelle Forbes. Yeah, so she's beautiful, but very forceful, very, she was strong, tough, very straightforward. She came on with attitude, even when she beamed in to the scene. The first person I've seen beam in with their hand on their head,
Yeah,
like,
I noticed that too. I was like, was that a tune? Did she show up?
yeah,
I mean, but it definitely
it's an
reminds you of
attitude beam.
when Major Kira first shows up on Deep Space Nine.
Yes.
She comes in tough, angry, no nonsense, doesn't want to be there.
Yeah, she came with the whole like attitude right there at the right from the jump, and of course Riker jumps all over that, like, not on my ship. No.
I love that so much. I love how Riker has it out for her. Like, he is like, Picard might have a soft spot for you, but I do not. He is coming in hard. Hot, I mean, but he was coming hard on her.
He came at her hard, I would say. He said, what did he say? He said, according, we will respect Starfleet uniform code. Like, he just jumped on her, right? And I'm glad that they addressed that later on in the episode, because I think that was a big thing. I think that was a big moment that Riker was a little bit too tough on her in that particular moment. I thought, I thought he came down on her very, very hard for that particular moment, based on the fact that she's wearing a cultural thing, it's a religious thing. It's you would think that Starfleet had some level of acceptance for that when you deal with a cultural integrated place like the Federation, where you have species and cultures from all over the universe, right? So you would think that some things would go beyond protocol, and the interesting thing that what that reminded me of was, there was a time when certain black hairstyles were not allowed because of those same kinds of reasons, like, that's not protocol, so we don't accept your hair to be worn in these kinds of ways. So there were certain hairstyles that were not allowed. There are certain, there's a lot of things that are not allowed, but you would think that in the future, when you're dealing with integrating so many different cultures, that they would have some level of leniency there.
Yeah, so we've got a lot more on this. Unfortunately, we have a break to jump onto, but man, there is way more to talk about. I was just looking at some quotes from Mr. Piller, and it was the Kurds was the other one. I was trying to remember. I was like, there are a couple obvious ones. He mentioned the Jewish people, the PLO, and the Kurds was, I think, were the three examples he gave. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break, everybody. We will be right back with a lot more of this on The Seventh Rule. Well, hi there, everybody. Welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Ciroc. I love my popcorn Lofton.
Yellow.
He does like Chad Ochocinco. All right. Here are the trivioids of the week, if you can believe that. There's a time when you want to call a Romulan's bluff, and there's a time when you don't. Riker agrees with Mr. Mott 100%. Mr. Mott told Picard the Federation shouldn't have colonized so close to the Cardassians. The Bajora claim responsibility for the destruction of the Federation colony on Solarian 4. Picard prescribes ginger tea with honey, 80 degrees Celsius for the common cold. Ensign Ro Laren transfers from the Wellington, and truth is in the eye of the beholder. Okay, that gives me two thoughts there. One is, that's a great quote, because as Guinan said, it works for a lot of things. Beauty's in the eye. Truth is in the eye of the beholder, as we see all the time people are 100% convinced that they have the truth, yet they're at complete odds. So it really just depends. I mean, nobody's out there arguing online thinking that they're wrong or they're the liar. They think they've got the truth and they're trying to educate the person on the truth. And the other person on the other side saying, no, I'm educating you on the, I know the true truth, the real, honest, true truth. So there's a lot to discuss there, but also, I really like Guinan's role in this episode. They've used her a lot, off and on. And I feel like to me, this might have been her best one because she became very useful in a way that, sure, somebody else, you know, Geordi could be like, Picard, she's a friend of mine. And Picard would be like, oh, well, then I better do it. But it works with Guinan the best. And it was such a great, I think this episode for Guinan and yesterday's Enterprise were great. Guinan, like we don't really understand her. We don't know what the situation is, but there's a trust between her and Picard. So when she comes in and she says something, he listens to her in a way that he doesn't listen to anybody else. And I think to me, her best line, she had a couple really good ones, but when Geordi says, I don't think she has a place on this, she doesn't belong on the ship. To be frank, I don't think she belongs in Starfleet. And she goes, oh, sounds like somebody I'd like to meet then. And I'm like, yes, that is so good. That, of course, you want, whoa, that's weird. You should want to meet somebody like that, not shun them. What, why, what's their deal? They've got a different perspective. Oh no, like they fucked up and now they're learning their lesson. Great. Like, what, I want to learn. I want to know this stuff. And the other one was later in that scene when Ensign Rose says something to her similar to that. She says, I don't know where it is. First, Guinan says, oh no, that's later when she says, I hear you got grounded. Oh, but so Guinan says, am I disturbing you? Rose says, yes. She says, good. And they go through that whole thing. And then when she, it's so great when she says, when Rose says, you hear anything interesting? And then Guinan says, well, they're talking a lot about you. And she goes, hear anything interesting? I'm trying to see. There was a, anyway, I didn't write it down, but there was another moment where Rose says, like, you know, I don't, similar to like, I don't belong here. Oh, she says, you're not like any bartender I've ever met. And Guinan says, you're not like any Starfleet person I've ever met. Sounds like the beginning of an interesting friendship or something like that. So that was really cool. I love her perspective. Her perspective isn't like, oh, she's different. Let's shun her. Oh, we disagree with her. Let's kick her off the ship. She's like, oh, somebody different. All right, let's sink my teeth into this situation. I love it. It's brave. It's interesting. It's wise. It's tempered.
Yeah, Guinan is like quicksand. The more you fight against her, the deeper you get in it. So yeah, she started off with like, "Am I bothering you?" And she's like, "Yes." She's like, "Oh, okay, good. Then let me sit down." And she's like, "I don't want to be bothered." She's like, "Yes, you do." She's like, well, "Why do you say that?" Because if you didn't want to be bothered, you wouldn't come out here in the public and sit here at a bar and watch people. You
Exactly.
want to be
Beautiful.
bothered. So I thought, damn, she's good. I also thought this was one of her best episodes, even though she's had other moments where I felt like she consulted Picard. I thought one moment that I can recall was she said something to him like, "Oh yeah, she was she put it in the context of slavery. Like, yeah, no, that's totally cool if you just remember that." And she had a
Hell yeah.
moment
That
with Picard.
was a good one.
And Picard was like, "Oh yeah, that does sound bad." So she's had her moments where she is the main person who is able to reach out to people who are almost unreachable, right? And that's why this is the best use of her skill set, because this is an unreachable character who has built up a front and says, "I don't want to talk to you. Get away from me. I have nothing for you." And that is precisely the person that makes Guinan the most curious. So she's like, "Oh no, oh no! The more you push me back, the more I'm gonna get to the source of what you're talking about." And that moment where she tells Picard, you know, she's a friend of mine, well delivered. What a great delivery on that moment, because I got what she meant by that, which is you want to talk to her because what she has to say is on our side. I'm a friend of yours. She's a friend of mine. You know that we are basically on the same team, right? I think that's basically what she was alluding to in that conversation. Like, you can trust her because she is on our side. She's my friend. You know what I mean? And so I thought that was great because then Picard got it instantly and said, well, any friend of Guinan must be a good person that I can trust. And let's sit down and have a conversation and tell me what you're thinking about. So beautifully written. Again, just beautifully written. She said, Guinan said, people like you and me who lost their homes. That was her reference that she said. And, you know, coming out at this moment where we're literally seeing people losing their homes, that kind of hit me differently too. Just that line hit a little bit different. I thought Whoopi Goldberg delivered it fantastically. She also said to her, to Ensign Ro, she said, you're one of those people who got their poles reversed. She's like, why do you always say the opposite, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I was like, I didn't get it, but I got it, you know?
Yeah. She was like, I gotta do the opposite of whatever. If you say don't go away, that means you want me to come over here because your poles are reversed, because you're in a place of pain, and you know, you're living in this moment of this tragedy, which we see Kira also dealing with on Deep Space Nine, right? We're talking about trauma, right? This is literally PTSD, right? This is what we're dealing with in this, because Ensign Ro is coming to the table with all of this PTSD from, you know, literally coming out of jail to deal with the same issue that she's already been dealing with, you know, seeing her father tortured. And she talked about being ashamed of her Bajoran roots. That was a very powerful delivery of scene that she, that Michelle Forbes gave us in that moment when she, you know, she said, my father was tortured until he died, and I was ashamed of how he begged for his life. I was ashamed of being Bajoran. And I was thinking, wow, this is deep, you know, and the amount of trauma that comes with somebody who lives these experiences. That's what Kira had, you know?
Yeah, but that also, the reason it was so good is because, like, I could see it. I could picture a poor 7-year-old kid who thinks her daddy is the biggest and strongest and smartest, and watching him beg for his life while he's being tortured to death, and her being ashamed of him, ashamed of herself, ashamed of being of Bajorans and all. I was like, that is the most disgusting thing to do to a child, because you know the Cardassians brought her in to watch. They did that on purpose with a, like a sugar cane or something like that. So that was very powerful. It was well delivered. But there was one line that I didn't agree with. And this is going to get a little edgy here. But Picard says to Ro regarding Guinan, he says, oh, she doesn't, she's very careful with who she calls her friends. Or he says something of that nature, like, oh, she called you a friend. Well, she's very picky when choosing a friend. I'm like, what? No, Guinan's chill with everybody. That's her thing. She's not picky. She's not like, I only have four friends in my entire life. No, everybody's her friend. So I was just like, okay. I mean, it worked for the story, but I was like, hey, Guinan's everybody's pal. She's chill like that. But anyway, that was just one little minor nitpick. I don't have my nitpick tie.
My nitpick was the line where Geordi's like, she doesn't belong in a uniform. I was like, whoa, that was kind of tough to me.
Well, she led some people to their death.
Yeah.
And we had a Gul Dolak, the Cardassian, who called himself a Cardassian. So I was like, that's a weird accent. Must be in the northern part of Cardassia, where they call it Cardassia. Oh, and
You know those Cardassians.
did you also notice there was no Transporter Chief O'Brien in this? I bet
Yeah.
you he was just not available because there was definitely a Transporter Chief O'Brien role. That's what that was.
Yes.
He's there, he says a few words, no big deal. And he goes, "Well, I can't explain it, sir," or whatever he says. But it wasn't O'Brien, it was Ensign Joe Schmo or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the rando guy. There was, and I think he went on the away team, the second away mission with Troy and Worf. You know, I thought there was another guy there in a in a security uniform. But I
Maybe it
wanted to go
was.
back and bring up one thing about Picard and how Patrick Stewart delivered some moments here that I thought really hit home. One of them was when Data says, "I have Admiral Kennelly on a secured line. Should I send it to your quarters or to your ready room or whatever?" And Picard sits back in his chair, crosses his legs. "No, here, on the screen." And the way he said it was, "I've had about enough of this, dude."
And he's like, "I want everybody to see. This is going to
Yeah.
be
Yes.
a teaching moment for everybody here." And he's like, "No,
Yes.
whatever he's got to say, he can say it in front of everybody here." I thought that was freaking brilliant.
Me too. Me too. I love that moment. And it was well delivered by Picard, by Patrick Stewart for that, just that moment, that no here on screen, kind of like, let's see, everybody watch this guy do his little dance. We're gonna all watch because we've already set him up with this empty vessel that we're, escorting, essentially. So I thought that was great.
Also, when Picard is first talking with Gul Dolak, they had a fun exchange there where they're like, "Oh, hey, how's it going, bro?" They're being all friendly with each other. And
Yeah.
then Picard says, "Now that we've established our mutual goodwill, what can I do for you?" Like, okay, well, we're all both, because Cardassians, oh, they pretend like they're such buddies and oh, everything's great. So now that the pleasantries are out of the way, what are you doing here? And I thought that was
Yeah.
beautiful. And then
Yeah,
Picard
meanwhile
says,
you armed your weapons and stuff, right? It's like
"Yeah." And then the guy was like, "Oh, we're just chilling, we're no big deal, and we're just wondering about this thing over here." And Picard says, "You can monitor their course if you wish." And he said it the smarmiest. He's like, "Well, I mean, we're not doing anything wrong. You can monitor them if you wish. Like if you because he knew what was going on. He knew they were sent in to destroy them, so
yeah.
very smarmy Picard is good Picard, I think.
I really enjoyed that. Yeah. When he plays his little chess games, I really enjoyed that. The whole, like, we're just going to escort them to their destination. It was all really good game. Like I said, very well written. I enjoyed the writing. He just had me too many times. Like even for example, when Ensign Ro says, they all had that meeting amongst the high staff in the ready room and whatnot, and they were talking about people to potentially interview. They were like, maybe we should go see Jazz Ulsa, you know? Oh yeah, I met him at the conference. He was a great dancer, And then Ensign Ro says, yeah, you're going to want to meet this guy because he won't ask you to
That was
dance.
so good. That
It was
was such a
such a
good little
moment.
dig to poor
Yeah.
Beverly, who had like two lines in the entire episode.
She got dug on at that moment. She got owned by Ensign Ro. Very good stuff.
And I remember when I was a kid on the first watch back in the day, I really liked Ro Laren. Really liked her. Really rooted for her. She's tough. She's strong. She's a lower decker. It was an interesting new character that they had introduced. Somebody different, somebody not perfect and clean and this and that. Really liked her, really rooted for her, was very happy to have her in the Star Trek universe. She was definitely one of my favorite characters. And I have noticed this kind of harkens back to the previous segment, but oh, also, do you notice Picard was wearing his jacket again
Yeah, I did.
on the
I
away
didn't like it.
mission? Oh,
Yeah,
tell
I
him
know.
why.
It looks a little too oversized for me. And then proportionally, that makes him look a little wider than taller. I like taller than wider, but that's me.
Yeah, but I noticed that we've completed the turnaround between Riker and Picard. In season one, Picard was the hard ass. He was a hard ass, no nonsense military general. And Riker was the Captain Kirk. Hey,
Yeah, he was laid
whatever.
back. Yeah.
But if you'll notice, they take on different roles now. Now Picard is like, okay, I'll listen to this ensign. Okay, I'll smile. I'll trust somebody. I'm the old softy. And Riker's the hard ass on her. He's like, he doesn't trust people. He looks at them all tough. Picard's all
Yeah.
like diplomacy. Riker's like, no, I'm with Worf. We got to blow stuff up. It's definitely an interesting dichotomy between the two of them. And they've almost completely switched roles. Now, Riker still remains off duty, the smarmy, ladies' man. But on
Yeah.
duty, he's like, he kind of rides people.
He's definitely gotten a little more barky and snappy as time has gone on. He's less patient and suave. He started out suave and like, "Hey, what are you doing?" Like old Riker would have tried to make a pass at Ensign Ro. It would have been like, "Hey, what's up with you? Oh, you got to take that earring off. I don't think the cards would like it much." That would have been old Riker first season. But this season is like, "Get that thing off here,
Riker
We
would have
don't
been
play
like,
that."
Riker would have been like, hey, I don't care. But regulations are, you're not supposed to have that earring. Allow me to take it off for you. And anything else you need to removed, you just let me know and I'm your guy. That's our little Reiki. Oh, we're almost out of time. It's time for the home run of today's episode.
Man, this is hard. This is a hard one. This is a really hard home run, but I'm gonna go with Michael Piller and Rick Berman for the home run for this. As much as I love the performances, and as much as I thought the guest stars really ate well in this episode, and Michelle Forbes is fantastic. I mean, she was just literally spin-off worthy, right? Because they're going to build a spin-off based on almost this performance. So that's how great it was. But it also was built off of this backstory that they developed for this occupation for the Bajoran people. And I think all of that is to the credit of Michael Piller and Rick Berman, who really gave us world building in this episode. They gave us a whole bunch of things that we can build more storylines off of and build a whole nother, expand the imagination of Star Trek. So with that said, I give them the home run overall because of the foundational pieces that we see in this episode.
Yeah, I agree with that. For them to have the foresight to kind of seemingly create an entire series that was planted on this first little seed could be a coincidence, but I mean, it sure seems like all signs, and I'm sure that information can be found. We'll ask Jason on the other side. He'll know. He'll know this thing backwards and
Yeah.
forwards. But secondarily, I feel like Guinan gets the home run of the episode because I really liked her role. I thought it worked. And she wasn't, it was good Star Trek writing in that it wasn't just like what they do with Troi sometimes is they just make her so submissive and nice and how are you feeling? And that works with people. Sometimes they just need somebody to be there for them. And she's great about that. But Ensign Ro
It
would
didn't work
not,
this time.
it would not work
Ro
with
was like,
Ensign
"No,
Ro.
don't sit with me.
If
I
she
don't
said,
want to."
how are you feeling? She'd be like, I'm feeling like I don't want to talk to you right now. But Guinan has, forgive me, but Guinan's got the balls to just walk right up to somebody and laugh at their little threats and bluffs and just be like, come on, it's cool. Like, I'm an outsider, you're an outsider, let's talk about it. It's not that you're already my friend, whether you like it or not. Like, this is a role that does not exist in Next Generation outside of Guinan. And so that's her place in the lore of Star Trek. And it's great. It worked out beautifully, I thought.
I've got my own Guinan story. Remind me on the other side of this, my own Guinan moment where
Okay.
I did what she did in this particular moment with a famous person. So stay tuned for that.
Ooh, that'll be great. All right. This guy knows how to tease. How to do a tease, I should say. All right. So that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna thank some people. I was like, what do we do here? I don't remember. I've been breathing smoke all week. I can't think straight. We'd like to give a very special thanks to some wonderful people, and their names are Dr. Anne Marie Seagull, Eve England out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom TJ, Jackson Bay out in Missouri, 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 Titus Muller, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Anil O. Palat, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, aka Crewman Guy, V. Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Henry Unger, Allison Leach Hyde, Julie Manasvi, Jed Thompson, Dr. Susan V. Gruner, Glenn Iverson, Dave Gregory, Chris Sternett, Greg K. Wickstrom out in Hawaii, Cassandra Gerard, Chuck A., and of course, the aforementioned Jason Oaken and the just now mentioned Chris Garris. All right. Stick around, everybody. We got the free for all up next, and we'll be right back on The Seventh Rule. Hey, everybody, welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Siroc Lofton. It is the free for all with Melissa Longo.
Hiya, hiya, hello, 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 hi.
Jason Oaken is also here with a cool DeJorin thing behind him. Chris Garris out in Texas is here. Cool background for you. That looks like Griffith
Hello.
Park. Allison Leach Hyde is wearing an awesome shirt made by Melissa. Get yours at the Introverted Republic slash Walking Art made by Melissa. Chuck A, aka TNG Fanatic, is here as well, hanging out with a cool wall full of a million goodies.
Hi.
The Matt Boardman, what is this? Like, do we always have the same background? I feel like we do.
I know. We great minds think alike, right?
We think very thummy. Very
Yes, yes,
thummy.
we do.
That's thumbnail code for YouTube that I just made up. And the Dark Lord, Chris McGee, is here. He's going to be doing double duty today. He's a tough one. Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I'm going to say that this season has started off very well. Three episodes in a row, three pretty good episodes. Now, having said that, I'm going to say because I've heard so much about Rolaren and this episode was very good, I'm going to say it was probably like a almost a nine, like an 8.9.
That is almost a nine. Does anybody else have any guesses that doesn't already know?
8.7? That
I'll
seems
go
to
with
be my favorite.
8.3.
Yeah, it's
And
people probably, there's always a variety of people. I'd say probably around 8.4. I think, Chris, I think you're probably in the neighborhood there.
all right, the correct answer, of course, everybody is, let me make sure I got this right, because I was as pissed as you're going to be right now.
I know.
7.8. 7.8. I mean, it's
I
not outrageous, but it's certainly
But still,
it's a C
ridiculous.
still. That's ridiculous. It's like a C
Did
plus.
I
we get any non-appearance mentions today? I didn't catch any. Some sort of. What do you think, Chris
No.
McGee? Nothing.
Nope.
Why
We didn't
out?
even have
No.
like a B plot, did we? Now that I think about it, this was just one
No.
straight story. All right. Before we get into this, though, Siroc was saving a story for the free for all.
Very quick story. And the premise behind the story is how Guinan forces her way into Ensign Rose space and sitting arrangement and basically says, you know, I'm going to sit here. And one time I was by the beach, by Santa Monica Beach, and there was a restaurant. And sitting on the balcony out patio area of the restaurant was a basketball player named Ron Artest.
Oh, no. Meta World Lakers. Peace?
Malice at the Palace.
Yeah. Yes. Also known as Meta World Peace. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Anybody who knows him knows that he's not a welcoming guy. He's kind of like keeps arm's length. He's basically what Ensign Roe is in this episode.
But he never fought in his life.
And so I wanted to talk to him, and I saw him sitting there by himself. And I said, hey, do you mind if I sit here? And I sat down as I was saying that, you know? And I could see his face was like, yeah, I mind. I don't want you to sit here. And I just kept talking to him and, you know, and saying, hey, you know, I'm glad you're on the Lakers. I think you have a good chance of winning the championship. You know, I'm a big fan of yours. And I eventually, you know, warmed him up because he didn't want me to talk or sit down. But I felt exactly like Guinan in that moment. And then within about 5 minutes, his friends came out of a Suburban and, I was like, let me get out of here now.
Now, Sarah, tell us what happened when you barged into his house.
No, I did not barge into his house. That would not happen. But I did barge to his seat, his table. And at first, he did not want me there. But after a while, you know, because I was supported above them. And they actually ended up winning the championship that year. So I was actually right about my prediction when I told him, I think you have a good chance. So I think that was what got him good favor with me.
But I remember that. That year, actually, when the Lakers won the championship, Ron Artest said, this is for my boy, Ciroc. I remember that.
Yeah.
While he had like champagne being, he's like, no, hang on, everybody. Oh, I want to thank, Ciroc, I know you're out there. That's what he did. It was nice.
Yeah.
That's good. But I didn't
it was
make
at the
connection.
Parade. It was, he waved at me at the parade. I did see that.
With his Disney ears on.
With his Disney ears.
Named one of his songs on his album after you.
All right. Well, Melissa, can you get us started off on the right track, please, and tell us what you thought about this episode, please?
I think it was higher than a 7.8. That's for sure. And I have a bone to pick with Riker.
Oh.
I have a bone to pick with Riker. How come Worf is allowed to wear his Klingon sash, his cultural Klingon sash, but Ro is not allowed to wear her cultural Bajoran earring? It's not fair. But so that's my bone with Riker.
He won't mind.
And I don't mean his trombone.
Womp womp. Okay.
No, I like the introduction of Ensign Ro because as Eve, she sent me a message earlier saying she wasn't feeling great and couldn't be here. But she said that she adds a interesting dynamic to the team, that she's definitely a different character type. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. I enjoy Ensign Ro because she's definitely got a moral compass and she's loyal to that moral compass, even though it's outside of societal norms or societal rules. And even if that moral compass gets her into trouble, I like that she's a moral person and follows her convictions. I feel like she's very similar to Picard in that way. I think Picard has a very strong moral compass, and they connect in this. Where was I going with that? No, but I do like that. And their moral compass never is intended to cause harm or malice to anyone. It's always for the greater good. And Mr. Mott, it was fun in the beginning. I think he was a what's the word I'm thinking of? My brain is mush.
Olean.
He foretold the know-it-alls on social media and with having all of the inside scoop when he doesn't really have all the inside scoop, but he thinks he has all the inside scoop, but he's a fun character. And yeah, I think that's, I'm going to leave it at that because my brain is going.
Great stuff. Thank you very much, Melissa Longo. And I meant it. That was great stuff. Jason M. Oaken is here. We got a lot of questions for you, Jason. Sirach and I were like, maybe Jason will know. Like, starting with this question before you get into your thing. Did Rick Berman and Michael Piller know about Deep Space Nine when they wrote this episode, or did they write this episode first? And then the idea came up.
I think this was first. They did draw. I mean, one thing is, I mean, the way it's presented, the way it's written, it certainly would fit very nicely, probably in the second season of Deep Space Nine. That could explain the rating. There are a lot of people who are, for whatever reason, put off by Deep Space Nine. And that's why we probably like it more than a lot of other people do. But yeah, I think this came first. And they drew a lot from it. Not everything is consistent, but, you know, everything from the haircut that they've kept for at least for the pilot.
Right.
It's no secret that they wanted the character of Roel Aaron to come over to Deep Space Nine, and Michelle Forbes didn't want to do a series. And that's why, you know, they had to create another character, which I think worked out very well, certainly for Nine for Deep Space. But that's what it is. This came first. I mean, it's always something that I look forward to watching when it sort of comes around. It has a lot of going for it. Obviously, it's an episode focused on who is essentially a person who is essentially a guest character becoming recurring, over time. And that's another sort of Deep Space Nine staple that we'll come to see years down the road. And, you know, obviously, you know, her performance, Patrick's performance, I think Les Landau shot it very well. You know, the fact that they went, you know, to Bronson Canyon to shoot a little bit of it, you know, opened up the palette quite a bit. I think the music fits very, very nicely here. I think a lot of things are going for it. It's just, you know, there are a lot of subtle things, and I'll talk about some of them later, not to bore anybody. But this episode comes together, and you don't need the B plot. It's the A plot that actually, you know, occupies the entire episode. It has a story that kind of goes along. Everybody does something. You obviously will get Guinan here, and seeing Whoopi, you know, do her thing is always wonderful. So I think it's just an enjoyable episode. It's something that builds on itself and, you know, lets us sit there and be captivated for 42 minutes.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, Jason M. Oaken, who snuck an Occupy pun in there. So that was interesting. He also put in our Zoom chat how to correctly pronounce Mott. It is pronounced Mott. I know when I first started watching Star Trek way back in the day, I thought his name might have been Mart, but that Picard just pronounced it Mott because of his accent. I was like, so is it Mott? Is it really Mott, or is he just pronouncing Mart incorrectly? Anyway, thanks very much, Jason M. Oaken. Chris Garris is here all the way from Texas. What, it's a big state. What do you think of this one?
It is a big state. Now, I enjoyed this episode. We kind of got another episode with some espionage in it. And I was a little worried here. Y'all were already starting off talking about the things I had written down already. But and because I was also wondering if they actually used Michelle Forrest's portrayal as Roe when they were developing in Oz role as Kira in DS9, because it is so similar. Because she, like Kira, she just speaks her mind, and Ro does the same thing literally within her first interaction between her, Riker, and Picard. She made sure to correct him when he gets her name wrong. Now, granted, he says he didn't know. So at first I was thinking, was he intentionally dead naming her? But no, he didn't know the tradition. So I have to pull that, criticism back. So, so that part was, that just their whole interaction was good. But you can never go wrong when you have Guinan, period. Whoopi is just so awesome. Cause I just love when she was talking to Geordi and he's, over there griping about Ro, how she shouldn't be here and so on and so on. And she's like, sounds like someone I need like to know. And she just goes over there, and unlike Crusher and Troy, she just sits down and starts talking. And she's like, she just, picks apart Ro's excuse for wanting to be alone. And that's what actually gets her eventually to go and talk to Picard, the captain, about what's really going on. And, Guinan is just so good because she basically just does whatever she wants and tells Ro, come with me. We're going to the bridge. We're going to talk to Picard. And he's like, what the hell is she doing in here, basically? But Guinan brought him. And because Guinan now considers her a friend, that spoke a lot to him and why he was willing to listen and, understand what was going on. And I was thinking about this, to reuse a term from Lower Decks. We have, a Badmiral with Admiral Kenley. He does the Cardassians' dirty work. So overall, it was a good episode. I think I had heard what y'all said about they wanted her to do DS9, but she didn't want to be in a series. So it makes a lot more sense now why, at least at the beginning, Kira acts like Ro. And that was a good one. So, but it was a good episode. It definitely worth the watch.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Chris Garris out in Texas, definitely a good one. Allison Leachhide is here in New Mexico. What did you think of this particular episode? I bet you'd seen it before.
I have definitely seen all of them before, more times than I can count. Been watching it forever. I've always liked this episode, and it is because of Michelle Forbes. She is wonderful in this episode. She is striking. I mean, I love the makeup on her, and she's doing such a great job with this character, because it is a complicated character to throw out. Like, here, you have all of this back emotions and things that are playing up, and this is a lot for 43 minutes of TV. So I love this scene with her and Picard, where she's coming clean with, she's actually on a secret mission for the Admiral and talking about why she's doing this. And the scene of her talking about, when she was given the sugar candy. And I'm like, this is wonderful. Like, I see why you became a recurring character. She was great in Half a Life as the daughter, but this really shows her talent. So I think that's why we got so much Ro, and she did such a lovely job. I also loved it when she took off her jacket and put it on the little girl and went, this was me. Like, I have a direct line in my memory to this little girl right here being me. And I thought that was, I think it's a powerful episode, and it's also really entertaining. So it's great. I don't have much more to say about it other than, yes, anytime we get Whoopi, we should always have more Whoopi. I did love that the ladies came over and went to greet her. I do wish they would have sat down like Guinan, but that's why we have Guinan, because Guinan's the one who's just going to sit down and go, yeah, no, we're going to be friends. And we all have had friends who we've been sitting somewhere not talking, and then they just sat down like, no, I have picked you. You are going to be my friend. And we all want Guinan to sit down next to us and pick us to be her friend. I also really like that we're setting up already 3 episodes into season 5. We're setting up the season finale. I thought that was really fun. You know, with the whole, when Guinan's like, no, you got to go talk to Picard because a long time ago I was in trouble and this person, you know, saved me from it and doesn't say who it is. And then we just see Picard. So I don't think that's true spoilers, but just know it's coming up in the end that of this season that we're going to get a lot more Guinan and Picard and it's great.
So stay tuned for that, Siroc. A lot more Guinan coming up in the end. Stay tuned. It's like 23 episodes away or something, but it is really impressive. It's pretty amazing that they did that so far ahead of time. Thank you very much, Allison Leach Hyde. Great stuff. Also equally impressive is Chuck A, TNG fanatic. What'd you think of this one? You love TNG.
Oh, yeah. I really, really thought this was a good episode. It maybe started off a little slow, but they really developed Anson Roe and what the character will become as the episodes progress. I did know that in Star Trek V there was a Roe non-appearance mention. In fact, there was 3 Roes: row, row, row your boat in Star Trek V. I'm sorry, that was terrible. I also liked what was said earlier that Mr. Mott, he gets quite a few more appearances in this season, and he also, the actor, has a role in the last episode of the season. I won't spoil what it is, but he's not Mr. Mott. He's playing a different character. The other thing that I really liked about the episode is that Cardassian. Forgive me, I don't remember the Cardassians' name, but they look like the Cardassians in Deep Space Nine now. They don't have the long sideburns and the hair on their face. So I don't know if that was something they corrected. They noticed that they didn't like the way the Cardassians were presented at the in the first episode, but I really like that. And the actor, I don't know if Ryan be able to look it up, but the actor played Admiral Kennelly. I noticed his name was Cliff Potts, and he looked familiar. So I don't know if he was in any other Star Trek, but I think he was an actor that was around a lot because I recognized him.
Played a lot of military roles, it seems.
Yeah. Was that it? Okay. Yeah, I recognized him and I recognized the name when I saw it in the credits. The other thing too is the ending. I really love because that was presented. Picard asked, you know, asked her to stay on the ship where she had other plans, but she went from, you know, don't let her on the ship to let's bring her back. So they did quite a bit with the character in just one episode. So overall, I really liked the episode.
Excellent. They've got an Ensign Roe action figure too. That was pretty cool back in the day. That was a lot of fun.
They do.
Matt Boardman,
the choking hazard. Sorry,
that was Nog.
I know.
Thank you very much for that, Chuck A, aka it's a lot of A's. TNG fanatic, the Matt Boardman. What's up? What'd you think of this one? You liked it, right?
Oh heck yeah! Are you kidding me? Like I always describe TNG as the warm blanket, right? You know, it's always fun to come back and visit. You watch it again and again, and you just feel, I don't know, you feel like you're home. I don't know. I often get asked what's my favorite series, and I honestly can't decide between TNG and DS9. You know, they both have that special place. But as I was watching it today, I was like, ah, man, this just feels good to watch and revisit, you know, this particular episode. Because, I mean, how cool is this episode that essentially we get some origins for Deep Space Nine? Like, I love these episodes to watch and see that this was a springboard that led to such an amazing series, you know, and to see the groundwork laid out, you know, with the fact that the Bajorans were refugees, you know, we got the Cardassians who are punks, And I thought it was interesting. I was today years old when I learned that initially they had discussed having the Romulans as the adversaries for the Bajorans, and I did not know that. I was like, "What? Who would have thought?" And that Rick Berman was like, "Nah, man, we're using those too much. Let's bring over these Cardassian guys." And I was like, "Hey, that was a good call, Rick Berman. You're a smart man. Guess that's why you were the showrunner for a while there." Anyway, but I, one of the things that I love about this episode is we get it's one of those episodes that I call it's the Island of Misfit Toys episode, because we get episodes where we have people who come in who are not necessarily well liked by other people. Like in Tin Man, we had Tam Elbrun come in who, there was some sort of incident, and Riker was like, "Yo, man, I got beef with you." Now here we come. Here comes Rolaren, and Riker's like, "Yo, lady, I got beef with you, But the thing that I love about it is that no matter who these people are, be they Tam Elbrun, be they Rolaren, be them Reginald Barclay, they come in and they're while they are in some way broken or dysfunctional, the crew finds a way for them to all work together and find a solution. And I absolutely love those kinds of episodes, and that's what this was for me. So, I mean, this gets top marks. Yay for setting up Deep Space Nine, which is fantastic. And but also top marks for showing us that we have ways that we can take our differences and find solutions.
Great stuff. Thanks very much, the Matt Boardman. I was trying to figure out what note that was in Fantastic. I think it might have been a C. Good stuff. Great shirt. The Dan Patrick Show. Everybody should check that show out. That's a good one. Sports stuff. All right. We've got the Dark Lord, Chris McGee, doing double duty today. What do you got for us, Dark Lord?
Well, as others have said, not only do we get our introduction to the Bajorans in this episode, but we learn a great deal about them, their history with the Cardassians and Federation, even that their family name comes before their personal name, all laying the groundwork for Deep Space Nine, as the Matt and others have said. I appreciate the deceit and intrigue in this episode, like a good spy thriller. With Admiral Kenley giving Ensign Rose secret orders, using her status as a convict to bypass Starfleet rules and regulations, knowing that he could just throw her under the bus at any time, landing her back in prison, and no one would question it. Thankfully, Picard has a very inquisitive bartender to help him see when he's being used. And of course, yeah, we finally get to see Mr. Mott, the best barber in Starfleet. And as Melissa had said, about being foretold, coincidentally, Mr. Mott's line, "I told him we shouldn't have colonized so close to the Cardassians," will turn out to be quite prescient a little later on. So I'll have a memorable quote, and I have Carrie's limerick. So let's get to the memorable quote of this episode. Picard, of course, saying, "Guinan is very selective about whom she calls a friend." For me, that one's always stuck in my mind. And Carrie Schwint left me her limerick, so here goes. This is Ro reacting, or her internal dialogue, as Guinan approaches her and sits down with her in 10-4. "Who is this woman who walked up to me? I don't want to chat. She doesn't agree. She says she's my friend. Why, I don't comprehend. Under the surface, there's more she can't see."
Excellent. It's funny, I could totally hear Carrie's voice in that. That like totally worked. Well done. Delivered just like Carrie. Beautiful. Thank you very much, Dark Lord Chris McGee. All right. Jake's final take. Any final thoughts on this episode, Srock?
One, I thought that Troy would have been really good to use when they're trying to cross-examine Admiral, what's his name, Kennelly. Like, can she sense if his intentions are good or if he's being deception, deceptive? That's just me. The other thing I thought about was how, the PTSD element of this, of the Freedom Finder, really carried on into Deep Space Nine, and Kira, as she dealt with a lot of that stress and that trauma. So they did also recycle that kind of basis of her storyline you know, being a freedom fighter, having to witness, you know, trauma with her mom and her parents, similar things. And I thought that, you know, they did a great job of addressing that. And I think that the compassion that Guinan showed to break through that exterior wall of defense to get to that core of real trauma and be able to make that connection is, you know, is was a beautiful thing that we should all do for people who are suffering from these kinds of traumatic incidences that are haunting them. So, yeah, kudos to her. But I also want to say that the Rock Candy story that Michelle Forbes as Ensign Roe told, that story was very riveting, well delivered, and felt personal on a level that you have heard stories about children witnessing trauma induced on their parents for the purpose of scarring them, you know. And so that in itself was like a reminder of some of the brutality that we've seen mankind kind of commit against itself in history. So, and having said that, I thought it was an interesting correlation that this candy that was kind of dangled in front of this child is the same in an adult form was her freedom out of jail. That was the candy. Mm-hmm. Like, here's a little candy for you. But I want you to witness this abuse again, like this torturing of these people that are your fellow freedom fighters. I want you to help set them up so you can watch them die in front of you too, the way you watched your dad die. So it's like trying to repeat that trauma for her, you know? And so I thought they did a good job of blocking that cycle in this. And I think Guinan is the key to why that cycle wasn't repeated, because she was about mm-hmm. to repeat that cycle. And so the last thing I'm going to say is about Picard's line towards the end when he was confronting Admiral Kennelly, and he said, "I am protecting the honor and integrity of Starfleet." Mm-hmm. And I do believe that's what Picard wants to do. Like, that's resonated with me as true, because it feels like Picard does have a strong belief in the integrity and honor of the Federation and of Starfleet, and he's there to uphold those values. And so I think he's a good benchmark for, you know, what is adequate execution of what the role of Starfleet is supposed to be. He has a morality, a moral compass that guides him. And I thought that was well expressed in that statement there. Now, what kind of didn't sit well with me was the follow-up to that, which is, I think he said something to the effect of the Cardassians were hoping to find someone naive enough to solve their Bajoran problem. And yeah, that's the problem that I had a problem with, because naive enough to solve their Bajoran problem. I don't think solving a problem requires naivety, you know. And later on, when we see Sisko kind of stepping in to be the person that ends up solving the Bajoran problem, it's not done through naivety, you know. It's actually done through a very deliberate process in which he resisted. So yeah, I kind of took a little bit of qualms with that, because I think that if there were such situations happening in the world, I think it's admirable to want to solve it, but I do think it's supposed to be done in a judicious, logical, compassionate way, not through the ways and means that Admiral Kennelly was trying to do it with deception and treachery. But I do think you can be good-hearted in approach trying to solve these things, because how else does peace come about if there's not an agent of change to kind of broker that peace? So that's my own take on that. And also, I remember Jake's character growing up. We used to go to the Bolian's berry farm. It was called Mott's Berry Farm.
Yeah, that's all I got. Excellent. And he saved it for last, everybody. You gotta leave him wanting more. Good stuff. Thank you very much, Sirach Lofton. All right, we've got Things Left Unsaid up next, everybody. Unless you're not a patron, then we'll see you next week. But thank you very much to the Dark Lord, Chris McGee, the Matt Boardman, Chuck A., Allison Leach Hyde, Chris Garris, Jason M. Oaken, Melissa Longo, for myself, for Sirach Lofton, Melissa, Aaron Eisenberg. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. We'll see you next time. And until then, always remember the seventh rule.